just whether there be in a single verse that's a tidbit that fits with a life lesson, or whether it be a group of verses that describe a particular setting that we can all relate to. It is very practical in that application, and it would make sense that it be such. It is part of wisdom literature. It is put in a way that individuals should be able to pick up on it and benefit from it just from the knowledge that's being presented. And the author of the majority of the material that we're covering was considered to be the wisest man of his time, if not the wisest man, because of the blessing that he was given by God of all time. So that's pretty significant in and of itself. We have the benefit of significant wisdom that's being presented through God's gift to an individual that walked this earth. As we study today, we'll be talking about particularly the subject of pride. Pride in the book of Proverbs is described as being sinful. It's not talked about in a favorable light. There are aspects of pride, which we'll bring out in today's lesson, that are important to an individual. If an individual lacks some pride in themselves, oftentimes they may have a situation where they lack self-esteem. And it's a balancing act, just as it is in some cases. Now, lying's an absolute. You can't lie a little bit. But you can take pride in your appearance and be, okay, I go to work, I'm shaven, and I'm in a clean outfit, and I'm presentable. That's a certain level of pride, by contrast to something that's an absolute. So pride is one of those things where there's a little bit adds flavor, but too much makes it unsavory. So we'll be talking about it in that light today. Pride's definition. There's different categories of this. We're going to look at it, and the third one will be tied to that balancing act that we described earlier. It's an overly high opinion of oneself, exaggerated self-esteem and conceit. We have phrases in our society where an individual might associate themselves with a God complex. That's associated with one's belief that they are smarter than everybody else, that their ability and their so on is on a higher level in mankind and approaching that of being godlike. We know that not to be true, but that's a term that society applies to this type of attitude. So the first definition on pride is over high opinion of oneself and exaggerated self-esteem and conceit. It exhibits itself in haughtiness and arrogance. An individual that is in a work environment and working collectively on a team, people are putting in their collective knowledge base on how to solve a problem. And let's say the team decides that collectively that, you know, we're going to go this way. An individual that is very haughty, that's very arrogant, if that decision goes against their opinion, you're going to hear about it. They're going to stomp off. They're going to have an arrogant attitude about, well, if it's either my way or the highway, this is going to work. Sense of one's own dignity of worth and self-respect. That fits in that third category of what we opened our discussion with. A little bit of pride in one's own self is appropriate, because it's important with respect to self-esteem and how we approach others that we believe that we can function in a society as an individual, that we are essentially equivalents and peers. We're not someone that is so low that we can't voice an opinion and be heard. We look at some of the ancient secular and spiritual teachings surrounding this. They position pride as a root cause of other sins. They would position that because someone takes an overly high attitude of themselves, that it drives them to do other things. Chinese proverb here says, "He who stands on a pedestal has nowhere else to step but off." You know, the Bible uses other expressions about talking about one thinking too highly of himself. Alexander Pope, who's a writer, what the weak head with strongest bias rules is pride, the never-failing vice of fools. It associates the idea of having too much pride with foolish behavior. Because what did we say about a fool? He thinks he's wise in his what? In his own eyes. And someone that takes way too much pride in their own ability or too arrogant about their own ability fits into that same category. Other examples, the ancient Athens, Greece. The term hubris was considered one of the greatest crimes and was used to refer to insolent contempt that can cause one to use violence to shame the victim. This was the category as it relates to an attitude there. It's a direct application in the crime of rape, where an individual basically trying to exert themselves over another party. Dante, and talking about the seven deadly sins, or Dante's literature, the love of self perverted to hatred and contempt for one's neighbor. And writers throughout the ages continue to talk about pride and its relationship to that. The seven deadly sins, if you look at the discussion of this, has its roots in Catholicism going back, and pride is one of the first of those seven deadly. Biblical descriptions. In Proverbs 21:4, the King James Version uses a haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. Now, we don't necessarily relate to that, so you have to look at a number of these translations. The English Standard Version uses the lamp of the wicked are sin, and the New Living Translation, all wicked actions are sin. So if you look at this in the context of these three together, a haughty look and a proud heart, and all wicked actions are sin. And they tie together with that. This is apparently a passage in and of itself. It's a little hard to translate because some will say the unplowing of a field or the plowing of a field, a lamp or some other type thing. But the idea is that there's an action following the haughty look and a proud heart that leads to sin. Descriptions in the Proverbs continue with Proverbs 30:13. There are those, how lofty are their eyes, how high their eyelids lift. What's a term in today's society that we talk about someone that is arrogant or they're prideful? We talk about them having high what? Might be a highbrow event. You know, we talk about a celebrity party or something. It's a highbrow. That goes back to this very framing of this proverb. How lofty are their eyes? Romans 1:18-32 talks about behaviors that are considered to be worthy of the wrath of God and contrary to the behavior of a Christian. And in this particular passage, we're going to find toward the tail end of it, it says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. A whole list is provided there, and then it starts with insolent. We've already used that term as it relates to pride. Haughty, which is prideful behavior. When somebody uses the term haughty, what does it mean to you? My definition is somebody thinks that they're better than somebody else. Okay? Boastful. When somebody's being boastful, what are they doing? They're building themselves up. They're bragging about what they do. They're making it about them and not about the collective. Inventors of evil. There are three terms there that fit into the same discussion that we've already used as it relates to pride. How does the devil tempt men? Pride is an avenue of temptation. As we transition away from the definition and some of the things associated with it, how pride is an avenue of temptation. How does the devil tempt men? 1 John 21, 2:15, do not love the world or the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes, the pride of life, is not from the Father, but is of the world. How are we to be aligned with God? If we are associated with looking at it from the pride of life, if we are viewing at our existence on this earth is to be all about ourselves, to be prideful in our behavior, boastful in our behavior, we are not from God. Pride of life is not from God. It's from the world. And what are we tempted to take? We can think a lot of things. I want to hear the audit. There's four things listed here, or five things. What else do people take pride in?
Money.
What's that? Okay, the way they look, the way they dress. We can take pride in our families. And I've seen this carried out. You'll see an individual as they're describing their child. They're the best thing, you know, since sliced bread. They do all of these wonderful things. And yet, when you back up and look at how that child behaves in general behavior, as it aligns with Christianity and how it's awful, the priorities are in the wrong place. What else? We have here education. An individual, I've heard the term, my father used this term, he would say someone has, trying to remember the exact way he expressed it now, is they've learned so much that they're dumb. They think so much of themselves and what they know that they really don't know how to apply common sense to it anymore. Or think they're so much better because they've gone through all of this study. An educated fool, that would fit with it. It's that type of term where they rely so heavily upon their education and take such pride in it that they've completely lost the importance of the simplicity presented in God's Word. It's particularly true as we were... Albert? Taking so much pride in the title that they've gained. And granted, there's an element of that. It takes hard work to achieve certain degrees and certain elements of education, and there's no shame in taking pride in having been able to accomplish that. But when an individual uses it to the level of saying, well, because of these things, I am now smarter than everybody else, and you should just listen to me, that's what's driven mainstream religion off the rails in so many ways. Is so many people have studied in seminaries that foster free thinking that they completely abandon the scriptures that are provided for them to study from. Therefore, they are so educated they no longer recognize the simplicity of God's Word. Proverbs 37-9. Two things I ask of you, deny them not to me. Before I die, remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. There's not anything in that passage that describes pride in a specific word. But it makes the point over and over again, Lord, let me have what I need, not what I want. Help me to be the person that, in this over and over, it says, give me neither poverty nor riches. It's asking, okay, give me what I need. Feed me with the food that is needful for me. we know when we compare to Daniel and his going in before the and asking the head guy over the young men there, we don't want to partake of the king's dainties. We want the food that is needful for us. And it's an exhibition of this very principle. The rationale there is, lest we be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? If we're satisfied with the things that we are needful of, as opposed to seeking the things that we don't really have a need of, and elevating ourselves before above our common man and above our common principles, we will be more inclined to be in accordance with this passage. Thoughts and comments as it relates to the pride as the avenue of temptation. That's correct. So Paul, as he's writing to the Philippians, and he also makes a point in other, he's taking comfort in whatever state that I'm satisfied in whatever state therefore I am. And that's a significant lesson to learn is, you know, we hear the expression being happy in our own skin. Or being comfortable in our own skin. Whatever state one finds themselves is find joy in being able to work from that point. And pride is the driving factor behind that, is that it's all about me, it's not about someone else. I'm going to take pride above myself, and all I can see is myself. Very good point. Mine's better than yours. It's another attitude that fits with it. What does pride do? We're going to see several things here as it relates to what pride does and behaviors that it influences. So pride dethrones God in one's heart. We talked earlier about an individual having a God complex, so to speak. They view themselves greater than man and than God. Romans 1 and 30, violent in Greek, you know, the term violent, is actually the word which is hubristes, which we talked about earlier as part of a definition of hubris, which according to Thayer means an insolent man, one who is uplifted with pride, either heaps insulting language upon others or does them some shameful act or wrong. Pride dethrones God in one's heart. If we are carrying God in our own heart, do we try to run other people down? No, it's our job to edify and admonish our fellow brethren to lift them up, is it not? So, pride dethrones God in one's heart. A proud man has such an exalted view of himself that he dethrones God as Lord over him. If I'm smarter than everybody else, then why do I need to listen to what God has to say? He exalts himself. This is another thing that pride does. Romans 12 and 3. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. In the one of the, as it relates practically to the work that I do in a day in and day out basis with helping people develop designs. People come to us thinking, I've thought of this wonderful thing and I want to go design this. And occasionally that is truly the case. Someone will come up with something highly innovative and that it's just never been seen before. But the majority of the time, as it relates to this passage, somebody else has thought of this idea before you have. And with the benefit of Google these days, you can typically do a search and find it in about 5 minutes. Very few things are completely original. They may be a combination of a lot of other things, but for an individual to think that they are smarter than everybody else and that they can come up with a grand theme for the world, it doesn't happen very often. And for an individual to get into that, let themselves be entrapped in that, you know, I see it day in and day out. People think that they're smarter than the rest of the world, and I've thought of this great thing. In reality, it's floating in the Sunday circular on the back page. Proverbs 25 and 27. It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is not glory. Now, this is one of these passages where it contrasts things. When we talk about the structure of a proverb, here we're talking about eating honey in the first part. In the last part, we're talking about seeking our own glory. There's two different things, and they don't really fit together. But what happens to you if you eat too much honey? If you're diabetic, make you sick? Okay, I think the idea here is that if you eat too much honey, you're going to get stomachache, or it's going to make you sick. Well, if you apply that principle to the last part, to seek one's own glory is not glory, it's sickening. It's not healthy. What does pride do? What pride does is he develops an attitude of superiority toward others. You know, if an individual is continually successful in something and develops pride surrounding that, then they're going to have an attitude, potentially, if they aren't carefully controlling it, an attitude of superiority. Proverbs 30 and 21 and 23. Under three things the earth trembles. Under four it cannot bear up. A slave when he becomes a king. A fool when he is filled with food. An unloved woman when she gets a husband. And a maidservant when she displaces her mistress. Now what do these four things have in common? Success or an elevation from one state to another. It goes to their head. And it's making the passage here, by comparison, the earth trembles as a result of these things. It creates problems. When we think of the earth trembling, we associate it with what? An earthquake. Destruction. There's a word picture that's painted in our minds of, you know, in different terms that these things cause destruction. These things cause heartache. Slave becoming a king. Now, it could go two ways. We could see a slave becoming a king and because of their poverty, having heartfelt honesty for the people that they related to before. I think we've seen that in our modern era as we relate to potentially Nelson Mandela and his imprisonment in South Africa and then becoming the leader of the country and trying to help people of his own race and state. But in many cases, an individual that has had absolutely nothing and then becomes a leader or becomes a king, what oftentimes happens? They're driven to have more and more. It goes to their head. So in general, more often than not, unless that person's heart is truly aligned, godlike to begin with, it leads to destruction. He becomes a braggart. What does pride do? It influences an individual to become a braggart. In 2 Timothy 3 and 2, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous. The list goes on and on. What's grouped in with this? Pride. Arrogance. Not in a favorable light or grouping, is it? What pride does, he becomes self-willed. An individual that believes that what they are capable of and is better than everybody else, well, my way is the right way. I'm going to do it. My will is right. Proverbs 13 and 10, my insolence becomes nothing but strife. Proverbs 21:24, the scoffer is the name of the arrogant, the haughty, the man who acts with arrogant pride. Trying to think off the top of my head a good biblical example of this, and I didn't think of one earlier in the lesson who fit into that category. But I would think that the individual that was deriding David as he left Jerusalem would fit into this category. He was running David down and making light of him. Titus 1 and 7, as a contrast, for an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain. When we look at the qualification of an elder, it's in complete stark contrast to an individual that is extremely prideful, one that is not self-willed, one that is not arrogant. So we see the contrast by comparison. Pride prevents conversion. So if we look at some other things that pride does to an individual, it prevents conversion. In Matthew 5 and 3, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It doesn't say blessed are the arrogant, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It says blessed are the poor in spirit, the contrite in heart. Individuals that realize they actually have a need in spirituality. Matthew 18 and 3, a perfect example of this is the Pharisee and the tax collector as they go in to deliver their prayers. Truly I say unto you, unless you turn and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. That's what's presented in 18 and 3 and in principle applied in the example I described. Prevents confession of sins to God and others. In Luke 18, 9 through 14. And I'll have to turn to my notes for that one because it's too small. Sorry. He also told, this is the parable we were talking about. Two men went up into the temple to pray. One a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Standing by himself prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. Totally opposites. Which one exhibited a prideful attitude? We're all standing here, we know which one it was. The Pharisee did. He thought he was better than everybody else. It states here that he says, I am thankful that I am not like these other people. What did the tax collector do? He humbled himself. He submitted himself to God and asked for what he needed, which was forgiveness. Howard. I'm sure that that's very true. Yeah, we are, in many cases, the result of our environment. So the Pharisee, having grown up in that environment of being immersed in religion and being elevated, the Pharisees were. Paul used the example. I was a Jew of all Jews. I was, trained at the feet of Gamaliel. If he had an opportunity to take pride in anything, he used that as an example to people and said, listen, I gave those things up because this is more important than Christ. And the tax collector, because of his environment, would have been subjected to derision, would have been hated by the Jews, no doubt. And yet here he sees the need for forgiveness. Very true. It makes the points here, though. Who really didn't confess their sins in this particular passage? The Pharisee. Because he didn't think he had any. And that's a fundamental flaw that pride leads us to have overconfidence in our own situation. And taking comfort in things that we shouldn't be taking comfort in. Pride prevents service to others. This passage here, as it relates to Jesus washing the feet of his disciples, what did Peter object to he objected to Jesus washing his feet. You know, normally we look at this passage only from the standpoint of Peter being admonished by Jesus. But there's an attitude here that Peter had about Jesus. He thought Jesus was too good to be washing people's feet. He was the master. He shouldn't be doing this. Jesus makes the point, though, that to be a master, you have to learn first how to serve. And that's the point that he's making here. Pride leads to destruction. In Proverbs 11 and 2, Proverbs goes through a number of passages as it relates to prideful behavior and the destruction associated with it and the harmfulness of it. Proverbs 11 and 2, when pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom. 16 and 18, pride comes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Kind of relates back to that Chinese proverb, doesn't it? If we stand up on a pedestal, the only place we have is to go down. Better to be associated with the lowly than to divide the spoils with the proud. That's true. Proverbs 17 and 19. He who loves transgression loves strife, and he who exalts his gate seeks destruction. We don't think about necessarily gates in the way that they would have at that time. Why would they have had grand gates in those days? Protect their cities, because they built walled cities. So, the bigger my walls, the bigger my city, the bigger target I become for destruction. Proverbs 18 and 12. Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, and before honor is humility. Again, this is a proverb that is a proverb of contrast. A behavior that is detrimental and a behavior that is wholesome. Haughtiness leads to destruction. Humility leads to honor. Proverbs 29 and 23. Man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. This fits with the story again where we talked about Peter and Jesus. Jesus making the point that to be a leader, one needed to serve. There was nothing dishonorable in that. 1 Corinthians 10 and 12. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. And this is a strong admonition to every person, whether they're prideful or not, is that if we think that our opinion or our position or our attitude is right and above all others, we first have to look and see if it's consistent with God's Word. Is it on the right foundation? Proverbs 6 and 12 describes how much God hates pride. And if we take the attitude of why he hates pride is because it's one of those contributing factors that leads to so many other things, we can see why it would be so devastating and so reprehensible in God's eyes. Proverbs 6 and 17, there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. What's the first one? Haughty eyes, prideful look. And you know, it's that idea of thinking that an individual puts upon themselves that they are better than another being, better than God, know more than what God knows. What's made one of the arguments that's made about the gospel is that it's simplicity. God talks about, it was foolishness to mankind to send his son to die on the cross. The plan of salvation to mankind in and of that day was foolish. To the Jews' eyes, it was made no sense that there was not going to be an earthly kingdom. And yet, God's ways are higher than our ways, and he makes that point in the New Testament. Proverbs 16 and 5. Everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured, he will not go unpunished. if we stopped right here with this passage and concluded on it, it would summarize God's complete attitude toward an individual that has an overly prideful heart. They're not going to be with Him in heaven. Proverbs 15 and 25, the Lord tears down the house of the proud, but maintains the widow's boundaries. It's an interesting comparison, but it's making the point that if one's thinking too much of themselves versus one that's been abased, God will protect the one that's been abased. Proverbs 8 and 13, fear the Lord is the hatred of evil, pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. Now these are the words of Solomon being put down to pen, but who provided Solomon with his wisdom? God did. Acts 12 and 23, Herod is a perfect example of an individual that exhibited an uplifted and prideful heart. And the story is there that King Herod is going out before the people and they're chanting that he is a god. And because he didn't give God the glory, he was eaten with worms and died. He's going out before people in his shiny garment and people are elevating him to the attitude of being a god. God strikes him and lowers him to probably one of the most horrific types of death possible. So distinctly different from that of this elevated king and God. We see a different contrast in behavior to when people praised the apostles and what did they do when they were told that they were gods? No, we are just men. Men like you. They could have taken a lot of credit, no doubt. And I would say that they would have been punished for it. We know when Moses did not give God the credit that was due, that he was punished. His punishment was not one that was so severe that it was horrid, but he was not allowed to go to the promised land like he had been working his entire life to. He spent 120 years trying to get to the promised land and got one look. Thoughts and comments on the subject of pride before we dismiss. That is so true. If we would look at it from that standpoint and not esteem others, not esteem ourselves more highly than others, it's a basic principle. It goes to the idea of common dignity and the importance of mankind to each of us. Thank you for your attention.